23rd to 27th of 86.
27th, and we're up here in, what do you call it, FEMAville? Or?
No, this is Parsons Overlook. That's what they call it.
Parsons Overlook. What is your full name?
David Humphrey. David Hugh Humphrey, I'm sorry.
David Hugh Humphrey. And you were, where were you born?
I was born in Alexandria, Virginia.
How long have you lived here?
I've lived in Parsons, well, basically 25 years.
How'd you find your way to Parsons, though?
Well, my dad was from here. This was his home. His, my mom and dad's home, and, well, my mom's from Buchanan, but my dad was from, Hamilton, and they've been, you know, they've lived here about all their life, actually.
Who was your daddy's people?
Fitz Humphrey and, Bessie Humphrey. They're from Hamilton. They lived in Hamilton for generations, as far as I know.
Can you
name
some of the generations in
Hamilton? Not really. Let's see. They lived there, as far as I can remember, come back in the door to CC camps. Because granddad always, he worked in the logging camps, and, well, back before they had cars.
And your granddad's name?
Fitz Humphrey. His name was Floyd C. Humphrey. And, but I guess they've lived there. My dad lived in Baltimore for a few years. And they told him if he didn't get out of there that the pollution and stuff down there was going to kill him. So they moved from there back here. He worked in the mines. That's right. Worked in the mines till he got hurt in the mines, and then he had 13 operations when he was back in 5 years. So he pretty well retired him then.
Where was he working in the mines when he got hurt?
Alpine Coal Company. Out at Baird. Or out next to Baird. Let's see. Gorminga. He worked out there as a miner, or a welder and mechanic for them. For as long as several years there, as far as I can remember. And Grandpappy worked, like I said, he worked in the woods. They did a lot of logging and, you know, cleared out a lot of the country here for people to live. CC camps, hauling logs out and whatever.
There's a big family.
Well, there's by my mom now, it was just me. But my dad was married before, and I got three half-brothers and a half-sister. And so, but they're all married and living all over. Well, my gut sister lives down here up on the hill, and a brother lives out towards Elkins here a little ways. Well, right here in town, though. And my other two brothers, one lives in Charlestown, and one lives in Baltimore.
So did you finish high school?
I quit in 11th and 12th grade, and I went in the Army. Spent 4 years in the Army. And I come back out of the Army and been doing mechanic work and anything I can find right now.
Did you get a career?
No, I was in the war during the Vietnam era, but I never did make it there. I was in the States the whole time. I did mechanic work for them, Fort Belvoir Ward. Did some paint work on cars and stuff like that, the Jeeps and stuff. But mostly did mechanic work for the 902nd floating bridge, putting up bridges and stuff. But that's been 12 years ago or longer. Right now I'm unemployed. I'm looking for work.
Yeah. What have you done most of the time?
Mechanic work. Mm-hmm. Well, my dad, well, he did it for years, mechanic and welder. And I learned a lot of it from him, then I learned it through the service. So I went through two different courses in the Army for it. So I guess I know how to do it.
You
part
like
of it,
anyway. Like
yeah. I like to make them run. Car cars or trucks. I've worked on some of the motorcycles, but not that good much. Well, I was working part-time for Sweetie Harper down here, you know, off and on. He'd get a contract job in, I'd help him out on it, but his garage there kind of got washed away. So he's back in the business over there beside Kidwell's. But they're trying to find a place, I guess, where they can build a new garage.
His business got washed away?
Yeah, we leveled it. We found the air compressor probably 4 miles down the river here. And we got it back, but it took them a few weeks.
Well, that was in the big
place. Yeah, it washed it clear away. It was bigger than that, or it was about the size of this couch. And, I mean, that long. It washed it probably 4 miles or better down the river. We found it down here below the tannery ponds. I guess it got caught in the brush, and then when the water went down, you know, set down. It was about 50 feet from the water, from the main body of water, river, then. Well,
what do you remember about that?
The flood? I remember we were sitting at the bottom of Crawley Hill here, or bottom of the red, over here at the red light, the moose, the old moose. I was talking to the owner, Bobby McWilliams, about the VFW. And I told her the front door just washed off the VFW, and she was telling me, yeah, it was a sound building, it'll maintain. I said, all right. And about that time, we heard a crash and turned around and looked back, and we couldn't tell from where we was at, but you could tell it come from the direction of the VFW. And we was looking down Front Street there, and then went a big floor freezer, went through the intersection floating through. And I was telling her, Bob, there goes your freezer out of the back of the VFW. And she was telling me, that's not my freezer. And I was telling her, well, there went an empty keg it might have been a full keg, I don't know, but it went floating by right behind the freezer. And I was telling her, well, then tell me that ain't your keg too. But it blew a great big hole out the back wall and blew it right on through, washed it all through. And everything got pretty well ruined, I'd say. Tore had to tear the whole place down because what was left wasn't really worth having because it was a brick and block building. I guess they're in the progress of rebuilding down there maybe now. We've been in the water there. We've been down at the hospital, and I've been down trying to save my dog, and there was no way getting out there to him. I even tried to swim out and had things running into me and beat me around, so I got up, back out of the water and got back to shore. Just had to watch him drown. There was no boats or nothing around available to, because all the boats that was out was saving people. And
where was he?
Right down here by Jim Falls' store there where Frank Harris' sign shop is. Right in behind Frank Harris' sign shop. Time we got to town, I was up Shaver's work that day and been up there working on my first cousin's A-frame, and anyway, it rained us out, and so we went to the house. We just got in and was getting dry. I was going to sit around and eat some supper there and watch some TV, and some people come up and was telling me that they had to push water at Porterwood in a four-wheel drive truck, so they pushed water up around the headlights coming through Porterwood, and we just laughed at him because we thought, I was telling him, oh, you're crazy. He's telling me, no, I'm serious. So I told him, well, if it's that high out there, you know, take me to town. Because my car was down there. I just put another motor in and stuff, so it wasn't legal for the road right then. And so I was walking. Anyway, we come to town, got to town about 8:30, and in front of Croston's down here, the headlights of the truck went clear underwater at Croston's. And he was going to take me around the block, and I was telling him, no, just back me up. We stopped and backed out of it, and then the headlights come back on, you know, where they was out of the water. And we went back up the street. Anyway, we ended up going down to my place with my dog, And the time I got down there, my trailer was just all but underwater. The car, the only thing I could see was the top of the rack, about 3 inches of the top of the rack out of the car, out of the water whenever we got there. So we decided we'd go up and see if we couldn't get a boat from the fire department, and they had all theirs was out. So I knew a couple of friends of mine that had a canoe, but we couldn't locate them because they was out busy helping other people too. And by the time we got back down to my place, the car was clear underwater and the camper was just all but underwater. And the dog was still swimming around on his chain, as high as the chain would let him go up, you know. He just got tarred, and after a while, you know, he couldn't handle, you know, keep up the stroke there with the water. The current was real bad. Finally, just drowned him. And they was wooden, well, there was four-wheelers floating by and three-wheelers floating by and all kind of, you name it, it was coming through there. We found a big propane tank there the next day and picnic tables and just all kinds of stuff. Stuff from the shoe factory, shoes, I don't know, what all. Just anything and everything. Brush and everything else all tore up. But he was, you know, the next day the dog was laying right there by the tree we were tied to, at the foot of the tree the next morning. But,
what was running through your mind when you
were doing this? Just trying to figure out the best way out to try to save my dog, but there was just no way for the water and the current. And my friends, they was a few of them there, and they didn't want me going out in there after him, because they were afraid that I would end up dead along with him. So we just had to sit and watch him die. And whatever after he, you know, died, we couldn't see him no more. We just, you know, more or less wrote it off and left. And that's when we came back up to the back up to the Moose Hill there. We watched that, I can't think of what his name is. Had that furniture store right there by the red light on the right. He had that big truck set around back there all the time where they hauled furniture and stuff in. Well, we watched it float up and down through the back street there. And it float from up there, float 2 blocks. Float from up the block, clear down below the half-price store. And then it float back up the street and just looked like a pinball machine. He'd go over here and hit something and then the water would take it back across the street and it hit something. It was on its side. And the next morning when the water went down, it was in the MP lot, sitting on its wheel. But it took it all around there that night. And it even hit that lawyer Cooper's office down here. Hit his awning and drain spout on the roof. It beat it up where it banged into it. One story almost off the ground. Where it beat it up, but we went up to the people's house I was staying with that night up on Spruce Street. We'd been in the water there all evening. We just got in and got dried off that dry clothes one, and a friend of ours, Steve Thurms, he came in and asked us if we would come in. David asked us if we would go and help look for any more. And her dad Alan Roberts was out in the blazer waiting on Steve. Okay, we told him, yeah, you know, we'd been out in it all night, but yeah, we'll go back out with you. So we went back down and we went down Holly Meadows and looked for about six, 7 hours there. And about 4:30 in the morning, 4:15, 4:30, I seen this trailer. Well, couldn't tell what it was. It was just something white, and it was clear across the water. Oh, I don't know. I'd say from the Big T over to pass, over about where the monument would be, about that far distance. Anyway, my light was just about dead. Using it all even, and so Amy's dad there, he had a real good light, My light was up real bright, and I was asking him to shine the light over here on this white thing. It looked like a house. And come to find out later, it was a trailer. But it went down there and hit this grove of trees and busted all up. Part of it was there and part of it wasn't. And so we decided we was going to go home and then come back in a couple hours and look for daylight. And I was telling them, I said, well, we done been out here all night, so it ain't much use to go home. We just get home, and I told them, I said, if I know me, if I go home, I'm going to go to bed, and I'm going to be there for a while. So I said, well, let's just look a little bit longer, see if we can't see something or somebody. So we decided we'd go on down the river. We're still shining the light on that house over there, and we waited till we got down straight across from it, and was just shining on it, and looking around, and couldn't see anybody. Them guys have been talking all along about still going home. So we decided, all right, everybody decided, well, we'll go home. We turned around and took a couple steps to leave. We done had the lights over on that trailer probably 5 to 10 minutes off and on, back and forth. I think Amy was asleep. Maybe not, but I've never really got to talk to her to ask her, but I think she was asleep at the time. So I think she was in, they said she was almost in hypothermia and in shock. And she got into a tree and climbed up in the tree about 4 feet out of the water and was holding onto the tree about 8 or 10 feet away from that trailer where we was looking at. But you couldn't see her in the tree, but you could see the trailer. And anyway, she yelled, hey, you could tell it was coming across from the water over that way, so we still thought she was in the trailer or the house. And anyway, we yelled at her and was asking her who, we couldn't tell whether it was a woman or a man. We was asking them who they was or how many are they over there. And she yelled, hey, at us 3 times. That was it. She wouldn't talk to us no more. And so in the meantime, me and Alan, we took off the Blazer. It was up the road there about a mile back up in the bottom there, about a mile and a half, something like that. And me and him were he run all the way up to it. I run almost up to it, and I ended up having to walk up all up. Anyway, he went and got the Blazer and come got me. We was going to go to town to get the fire department. And in the meantime, while he was out getting the Blazer, there was another truck come out, and he'd stopped them and told them about it and sent them to town to get the law and fire department and whoever else they could find, I guess. And, so we took the Blazer back down as far as we could get down next to the water and shine the lights of the Blazer across to the towards the house. And I backed it back sort of down over the banks of the headlights that come up real high, put it on high beams, shine it over there. Still couldn't see anybody. And we knew somebody was over there. So Don Goss brought his boat and come down. Most of the emergency people there was tired and from all the fighting and people they'd been saving all evening there anyway. And then that and the water being so high and bad out there, they was scared to go out in the boat. So Goss's dad, Don, he's probably 70-something years old. I told him if he, it's his boat. If he wasn't scared to take it and go out there, I wasn't scared to go with him. We'd go out and see who's over there, see if we could save him or whatever. So, okay, so we got in the boat and started out in the water. And well, it took about 8 or 10 of us to get it off the trailer. Well, we got it in the water. Me and him started across. The only thing we had was Forrest Bloom's flashlight. Nice flashlight, but there's only a light we had. Didn't have any lights on the boat or nothing. We started to cross, and David and Sturms was yelling at us. I couldn't hear what they were saying for the water roaring and the motor roaring. So I told him to shut the boat off, so he did. And they was to tell us that the telephone lines or the power lines had got up around the motor of the on the boat. And we was dragging the poles down the river. We was taking them right down the river. The ones that washed out or been knocked out, we was pulling them down the river. The boat couldn't even tell it in the water. But as soon as he shut the boat off, the boat went back up the river about 4 or 5 boat lengths. And then when it stopped, the cable fell off the boat. And by that time, we was free flowing again. Took him a little bit to get the boat started. It didn't want to start right back up. So in the meantime, we was drifting down the river. The water was probably running 55 or 60 miles an hour on the water. We drifted up within these two rooms from the grove of trees where she was at, but she was on the other side of us, way on out. I thought we was going to hit the trees broadside. I thought we was going to hit it about 55 or 60 mile an hour broadside when he got the boat started. We got it in gear and just drove right across. But they was house trailers and, like I said, you name it, cars and trucks and anything else that happened to be in its way was coming down through there. But we got lucky and got over and, you know, saved her. She was in a tree about 25 feet from that house tower. She told us later that was a house tower. Said that, well, we found that out the next morning when the water went down, but she said she was in the tree when it come down there and hit the trees beside her and just blew apart. And part of it went down the river and part of it stayed there. But she didn't know whether there was anybody in it or not. It destroyed it. It was just like one room, two rooms. It looked like it was standing on its end because it was flipped up in the air and kissed the trees. But I had to hold the rope while Danny's dad, he had to get around the tree. Well, I had to keep the boat from, you know, fishtailing back and forth. I had to hold it probably 10, 15 minutes over there anyway. Well, I never been out on the water, never tried to rescue anybody. I didn't know what the heck we was even doing out there. We got out there and she was in a tree, say here, and there was a tree off out in front of her, twice the length of the boat away from her, up the river, but it was sort of offside. Well, anyway, I told him just hold the tree there, and we pulled in beside it. And as we got in beside the tree, they had a 400-foot rope on us. The fire department didn't put on the front of the boat. And they was leading us out as we started out. Okay, well, the rope, we run out of rope, so I had to pull all this rope into the boat. And it was, like I said, it was still tied to the front. So I pulled about 20, 25 feet of the rope off the front of the boat, out, and made a big loop. And then when we come up beside the tree, I threw my arm around it and tried to reach around and grab the rope on this side. Well, when I got the rope, pulled it back, about that time the current shifted the boat around. It drug me almost out of the boat. The only thing caught on me was the heel of my shoe. Was the only thing I had caught in the boat. I was out of the boat. I was hanging on the tree. And he had to start the boat up again and pull the boat back up to where I could get my feet back down in the boat. Which was only high as this chair, maybe, if that high. There's a little square hole that's down in it. I stuck my feet down in it, and then there wasn't no place for me to tie the rope off to on the boat. There was no hooks or nothing on it, so I had to hold it. I had a yellow raincoat on, and like I said, I had that loop there, so I just threw the loop, pulled the loop down over my arm. See that scar? That's where I had to, if I hadn't had the raincoat on, it would have been worse. But I had to hold the rope under here and hold my arm up. And then just let the rope, let it lead out, let it go across my arm to let the boat back in far enough to where it would go into the forks of the tree where she was at. And then I had to keep the boat from going back and forth like this in the water while he got up on the boat, had to stand up on the back of it and then help her out of the tree and get her down and into the boat. And he got her into the boat there, you know, safe. And I asked him if the boat would start, and he said, yeah, it'd start. I said, well, start it, make sure here before I turn loose the rope. And so he started it and put it in gear, and it pulled up. And I said, well, okay. I said, well, now when I tell you to go, I said, I don't want to be all day getting from here back over to the shore. All right. So I turned loose the rope and told him to go, and we come back to the shoreline. And got her out of the water. I got on the boat into the water there and got her out. And then I didn't realize, you know, So Hyper, I guess, from being out there fighting all that water and everything. So I picked her up and got her in my arms. I didn't realize I was that tired. And my arms started shaking, so I had to hand her off to another guy that was had just come up there. And I give her to him, and him and another guy, they carried her from there on over to the ambulance, and they put her in the ambulance and took her to the hospital. But then we had to get out and then get the boat back out of the water and get it back onto the trailer. And we was down there for a little bit longer. Well, we was there till I got home probably 7:30 that morning. But we've been out in it all day, all evening from about 8 o'clock that evening till 7 the next morning. But we was down there 5 or 6 hours in the water down there. I was carried out into water clear up to my neck out into this place looking for maybe, thought maybe she might be in a tree or anyway. Her dad told us that they was in their house watching TV. He said there hadn't been nobody down there telling her, you know, they knew the water was coming up, but they didn't think it was anywhere near flood stage. Said they was sitting there watching TV, and he said he happened to look over at the front door and water was coming through the front door. And in the house. So him and his wife, I guess they grabbed whatever they was going to take, and Amy, they jumped in his Jeep and tried to come out from the bottom down there. It's like a dike. Sits up so high. Anyway, with all that water running over the road, you couldn't tell where the road was even at. So either he ran off the road or it washed it off the road. When it did, it flipped it over on its side. So they got out and got up on top of the Jeep and was up on top of the Jeep, I understand, for about almost an hour before anybody knew that they was out there. And they called the fire department, or someone, you know, had the fire department come down there and tried to get out to them and rescue them there. And they end up from the time we had three rivers that come into that. You had Shavers Fork and Dry Fork, and then you had Blackwater up here to come into Dry Fork here at Hendricks, right above Hendricks. And I guess Dry Fork was coming down through, and then Shavers Fork met, and then the other river too, all three of them combined to come through Holly Meadows there. They said it was about a 3 or 4 foot wave. And the water was here, and then 3 or 4 feet higher come down and hit them. When it did, it rolled the Jeep over again and towed Bob and his wife, towed them towards shore. And he said Amy was on the Jeep then, but then some of the guys from the fire department was there. They told me that she wasn't on the Jeep, or they couldn't see her. That might have been it too, you know. She might have been behind them or something. They couldn't see her for Bob and his wife there being there. Anyway, Amy said she got worse. You know, whenever she come back up out of the water, she was going down the river, and she run into barbed wire fences, and things run into her in the water, and said she ended up on a picnic table for a little ways, and then she ended up on a roof, either a roof or a porch floor or something, and it took her almost right into that grove of trees. When she seen this tree coming up to her, she got up onto the porch floor and stood up and jumped up in the air and grabbed the limb. And as she grabbed the limb, the porch roof, whatever, hit the trees at the base of the tree and just blew it apart and went down in the river like toothpicks, you know. She climbed the tree and been in the tree for hours. And I told Steve up until just a little bit before that, I didn't have too much hope of finding her. I mean, if we did find her, we figured she was going to be dead because she couldn't swim. And she's, I guess, I'm just guessing, I'm not sure. She's probably 18, something like that. But, you know, she couldn't swim a lick. And, but she washed her about probably three miles down the river or so before, you know, she got in the trees from where she was washed off the Jeep. But they was all sorts of things. You would believe it. They was, I seen probably a 40-foot mobile home earlier. It was one you put in the back of a pickup truck with a fifth wheel camper. I seen it hit the town bridge there, the railroad bridge, and it just wiped it right off the foundation, right off the frame. It just blew apart. Looked like it had a bomb in it. But it went right on through underneath the bridge. The frame went, and the rest of it went through underneath the other two. It was gone.
Was Amy holding on pretty tight?
Yeah, she was. No, well, yeah, not, or he did. Dan, or Danny's dad did, Don. But, you know, I couldn't help him. I was, I could do was hold the boat and keep the boat from moving around to keep him, keep from throwing him out of the boat. Or happen to throw maybe both of them out of the boat, you know, while he was getting her out. And then she was scared to death. She, you know, she felt safer in the tree than she did in the boat, you know, which I can understand that. The tree had been there for years and years, and there we was in a boat with 50 mile an hour water running down through underneath of it. Anything I could, you know, I never really thought much about it till we was out on the water, and well, so it had me stretched out there when I was holding on to the boat, whenever it about pulled me out of the boat, and I was looking back up the river, and then I got to thinking, well, heck, you know, here we are, I'm paying attention to trying to hold on to this tree and keep the boat in one position, and he's over trying to, paying attention, trying to get her out of the boat. They could have been anything come down through there and hit us. We didn't ever know that it was going to hit us until it hit us. You know, and I got to trying to watch the water and watch him too. You know, there was logs coming through and everything else. But we got lucky and got her out and got the boat out of her without giving, you know, anybody else hurt or anything. But I guess some people wasn't as fortunate that night.
How did you maneuver in the river without a light?